This morning, it's been a few weeks that I've been gone, but we're going to get back to Ephesians chapter 6, and to kind of review the thought we're going to sum up today, this thought really kind of began back in verse 22 of chapter 5, and it's really carried on into chapter 6, dealing with, I started with marriage, it deals with children, chapter 6. Two classes ago that I was here, we talked about fathers and parenting, and we talked last time about slaves being obedient to masters. And a thought that we've kind of gone all the way through there is that the idea of a servant heart is key to all of those roles, if you will. And so as we looked in verse 5 last class, it was a slave is to be obedient to his or her master as to Christ, it says in verse 5. And the same would be the same in children being obedient, as parents being parents to children, or as husbands or wives in relation to their spouse. And so we're going to pick up and we'll just kind of get into it and start in verse 6. Someone wants to read that, please.
Not by way of eye service as men pleases, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart.
Okay, so a couple words there. Like the words like eye service and men pleasers there, it's only used a couple times, and it's used in Paul's Paul's letter to the Colossians, and we'll get to that in a second. But they're used here. Those words are used as in reference to slaves. But I want us to see as we're going to go about, and as we kind of mentioned a little bit before, that this would apply to other relationships in our lives too. But one thing that he points out is that doing it for Christ from the heart. Now, it's easy to use the master-slave relationship and apply it to employer-employee relationship as today, and really that can apply, but that actually kind of waters it down, I think, because it doesn't get the full emphasis of what he's talking about, because, as we mentioned before, a slave couldn't just quit the job and go get a different one, okay? So the slave is stuck. Okay, so we're looking at this from a perspective of a slave who has to either, there's a few options, he could run away and be constantly looking over his shoulder for his master to come and punish him and probably kill him, or he could have killed his master, which again, you're looking over your shoulder all the time as a fugitive, or you could stay there and do the work, okay? Now, we'll get into that, to more of that here in a second, but let's turn to Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6. And in verse 17, if someone wants to read that, please.
For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, that the righteous man shall live by faith.
Are you in Romans 6? Romans 6, verse 17, please.
But thanks be to God that though you were slaves of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were committed.
Okay, so when we're looking at this here, when we're looking at this phrase from the heart, and it's used in reference to our relationship to God. Okay, so God would be our master, we'd be his slave. That's another picture of our relationship. I mean, obviously we have the marriage picture, the child father picture as well. But we're looking at it as from a slave or a servant perspective. People like servant better, but slave actually is what we're talking about here. And to understand that this isn't, we are serving God from the heart. And God obviously is going to be the best master, okay? So you could say, well, that's a lot easier to do that. But the thing that our Master God is asking us to do some things that aren't always easy, as Jared even brought out this morning in his message. But when we're looking at the picture of the slave then, and we're kind of applying it to a physical slave and a physical master, Paul is encouraging them who, in this case here, it wouldn't always be that, but there would definitely be the case of where there was Christian slaves to masters who weren't Christians, okay? And so he is dealing with that. I mean, it would have been been nicer, like in Onesimus' case, where Philemon was a Christian, and it would be pretty nice to have a master who was a Christian, but that wasn't always the case. And so Paul is talking about slaves here who are going to probably deal with unreasonable masters and wicked masters at times, to do their work from the heart, not as men pleasers, not as for some external appearance, but do it as they are doing it for God. Okay, do it as they're doing it for God, even though it's probably unreasonable. Let's turn to Colossians 3. And those who haven't been to many of the classes here, if you have a comment, just raise your hand and we'll get you on the mic. But in Colossians 3, someone read verse 22, please.
Slaves, in all things obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord.
Okay, so, and we talked a couple weeks ago, I think it was, when we were dealing with verse 5 in Ephesians chapter 6, when we talked about fearing the Lord, okay, or with fear and trembling. And when we looked at that back then, that same phrase is used in Philippians 2:12, which we are familiar with, where we work out our own salvation with fear and trembling, okay? And so when Paul is using that phrase, he uses that in Philippians, and those words are the same. And he uses that dealing with the slave to the master. When you're doing that with fear and trembling, that same, how do we work out our salvation to God with fear and trembling? And it wasn't fear as in, oh, we're so terrified of God that we're just obeying because the wrath is going to come if we don't. Okay, now that's not what Paul is getting at there, and what we as you know, of course, there's no one who is an actual slave of someone who is a master here at this time. But if we're looking at that, that is what he is instructing, encouraging the slaves at the time to do that, to be that way to the master. To be that way to the master, and as we'll see, we'll get into some more passages, even if they're unreasonable or perverse or crooked. But let's first go back to Ephesians 6. And so when we have the sincerity of heart fearing the Lord, and for a time, and it's the same thing with, that is why when Paul talks about working our own salvation with fear and trembling, if it was like a terrifying fear that we're just petrified that if we mess up, that we're going to get, you know, the wrath of God's coming, that only goes so far. That will only last so long. Because eventually, as you see with the Jews, how they pictured the law, well, it only lasted so far if they went about that way, if they didn't have their correct heart, okay? They eventually fell away. And so that's only going to last so far if that's the type of fear and trembling that we're applying to that as Christians, or if that was the type of fear and trembling that the slave was applying to the master. Because if it only is a fear of wrath, then eventually it's gonna fade away, and the worst thing gets sloppy, and then the wrath will come. So we have to consciously, as Christians, and they were as servants, to get through some of that unreasonable stuff, you have to have the right perspective. You have to do it for the Lord instead of for the unrighteous master. Okay? But he continues on a little bit here, or as talking to slaves in verse 7 and 8, if someone wants to read that, please, in Ephesians 6.
With goodwill, render service as to the Lord and not to men.
Verse 8, too, please.
What's that?
Verse 8 as well.
Okay.
Please.
Knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free.
Okay, so notice how Paul writes it in Ephesians here, and he talks about rendering service to the Lord and not to men. So we're going past the master that is, you know, barking orders or whatever and unreasonable, and doing it for the Lord. And it says in verse 8 that there is a reward for he who does whatever is a good thing he does, he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave nor free. Now, he does reference slave or free there. But I want you to go to Colossians 3, and let's look at how he writes it here. And this is in verse 23 through 25. So I want to read that, please.
What chapter?
Colossians 3. So in verse 25, who's Paul addressing? Is he addressing the slave or the master? Well, he's addressing the slave particularly here.
In 25.
Because he is talking about, and it would, you know, we can all, it all is going to apply to us as well, I think. But when he is specifically talking physically here, he is talking about the slave doing right. So what I'm bringing up here is that even if the master is unreasonable, the slave still could do what is wrong if he doesn't serve the master how God wants him to serve the master. Even if the master is unreasonable, someone still can do what's wrong if they're the slave. That doesn't mean that the master is free from wrong. That just means that the slave is still accountable for how he or she reacts to the master, even if the master is wrong. Or if the master is right. I mean, either way. Now, because the master, because Paul addresses the master specifically in chapter 4, and later on in verses in Ephesians chapter 6, he addresses the master specifically. So it's really easy to say, yeah, we will have a reward if we serve the master right, but it's not always thought of, hey, even if the master, because the excuse is often given, well, they're unreasonable, like, and you can apply it to an employer. And we don't, I mean, it's, I'm not saying that I particularly care for that crossover, but how many times do you hear an employee complain about an employer? And so they're slacking. That does not mean that the employee is right in slacking and not doing his job just because the employer is acting wickedly. That doesn't mean they're right. Well, they're just so tough to work for. That doesn't mean that they're doing what's right if they don't do it and serve as to the Lord. And so the same would be for the servant here, for the slave that Paul is talking about here, is that he who does wrong will receive consequences of what is of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. And you can, that does apply to everyone, because Paul, back in Ephesians, he talks about that to the masters as well. And I think you could, you know, as we will do today, we're going to think about that in relationship to the parent-child relationship and the husband and wife relationship too. Is that just because someone is unreasonable does not give us the ticket to sin. Let's turn to Genesis 39. You know, and I know we all know this, but sometimes it's a good reminder because I don't think we always, we look at it and it's 2 pages long, kind of like what Jared read this morning, that one verse where Paul got back up and went back into the city after he was stoned. I mean, that doesn't really hit us as much because we read it and it's 3 verses and we're past it already. But I think sometimes we need to be reminded of, because it wasn't just a few pages for Joseph here in Genesis 39. Someone wants to read 1 through 6, please, of Genesis 39. Okay, so then we, Potiphar's wife starts getting some ideas, and in verse 9, when she comes on him, he says, "There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Now, I want you to remember that as we continue on here. Let's go ahead to verse 19 and 20. Someone read that, please.
"Master heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him, saying, 'This is what your slave did to me.' His anger burned. So Joseph's master took him, put him into the jail place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail."
Okay. So Joseph was treated wrong and was unreasonable. But it didn't give Joseph the ticket to sin. It didn't give Joseph the ticket to do what is wrong. Even though it was unreasonable, even though it meant his position in Pharaoh's, in Potiphar's house or the dungeon. And Joseph at the time, and we know the end of the story, so it's like we sometimes we kind of associate that, well, we know it gets better for him. I don't think Joseph at the time thought that he might get out of the dungeon. Like, put yourself in that position. It doesn't look so crystal and so rosy when you're in the position. It looks a little better after, because we know what happens. But even in, if you read the rest of verse 21, that the jail guard put him in charge of the prisoners, and the Lord was with him, and he prospered. Let's fast forward here to verse 23 of chapter 40. Now, Joseph had interpreted a couple dreams, and they came true, or they're fulfilled. So in Genesis 40, verse 23, verse 23, so I want to read that, please.
"Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him."
Okay, so again, Joseph had asked him to remember him when he had got out of when he was freed, he got out of prison. But Joseph, again, was forgotten. You see, it would have been pretty easy to get discouraged in that case and maybe take it out on God, or maybe stop being faithful to God, because it would have been a lot better. It would have been, man, if he was unfaithful to God, would have went with Potiphar's wife, man, he might have still been in charge of, you know, in Potiphar's house. I mean, again, that looks like that on appearance. I think eventually, if that would have happened, he would have got killed. Okay, that would have been found out eventually. Sin does not stay covered up forever. And so eventually he would have got killed. But that view is, though, is that temptation is, man, it would have been so much easier if I would have given in or maybe done something wrong. Because, I mean, it's the master's wife, right? It would have been a lot easier to do that for a period of time, but it wasn't in the long run, it wouldn't have been. It was a lot harder in the long run, the initial stuff, and to get to where he was later, it was a lot harder to get through. And he chose that. Turn to Genesis 41, and let's read 38 through 44. Someone read that, please.
Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all of my people shall do homage only in the throne. I will be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring of his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put on a gold necklace around his neck. And he had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, "Bow the knee," and he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt."
Okay, so Joseph, we see that the success that he had, because he served God over men, initially, I mean, no one would have thought, even his own family didn't think that he would be in the position that he was in. But God took him there because he was faithful in Potiphar's house, because he was faithful in the jail. That's why God brought him there. And what did Joseph say to his brothers after Jacob died? What did he say to his brothers for when they sold him into slavery? So that you meant it as harm or evil, but God meant it for good. So we think, and you apply that to the slave, because we're talking, we'll use a physical slave and kind of talk about that again here. You apply that, the master or whoever might use whatever for evil, but eventually the slave who does right and does the will of God and work heartily for the Lord is going to be exalted like Joseph was exalted. Might not be on earth, but it might, you know, eventually be on the other side of eternity. But that's the thing, is that when we're looking at that physically, we have to understand that just because, and throw out any excuse you want, just because that, well, they told me to do it, just because they're unreasonable, just because I would have got beaten if I didn't make it right to do what is wrong. You still could do what was wrong even if the master was wicked. Okay, so let's turn back to Ephesians 6. I don't know if anybody has any comments on that so far.
Well, I think basically every one of these relationships are, you know, God's trying to teach us something about the church, how a relationship is in the church. And I mean, that there are twofold here. You know,
right.
We have to figure out how to be parents, and we have to figure out how to be husband and wife and workers and slaves and masters. But it's talking about the church and how we need to have our king be the king, and how we need to pay homage to him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
the world doesn't go about it that way. There it's all about what's the physical, what can I do in the moment to be successful or whatever it is, you know. And they look at it in a very selfish way, you know. And so it doesn't. What do I get out of it? Instead of, is it about the kingdom or is it about me? And so that's what the world is teaching or is preaching on.
And I think the beauty of doing this is God's able to put every relationship to so that we can look at every angle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we need to be as far as service for him.
Right.
So, I mean, and that's so, I mean, like you say, that he uses the toughest relationship here, the slave and master, and even a bad master. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we're still supposed to be the servant.
Right.
To him, just to him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's go to Ephesians 6, and someone read verse 9, please.
And masters do the same things to them, giving up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him.
Okay. Turn over to Colossians 4. We'll read that before we make the point here. Colossians 4, verse 1.
Master, show to your slaves what is right and fair, knowing that you too have a master in heaven.
Okay, so Paul obviously is talking to masters who are Christians here. Okay, but notice that he talks about in verse 9 of Ephesians 6 that there's no partiality, you know, give up threatening them. He says in verse four, chapter 4, verse 1 of Colossians, you know, to grant your slaves justice and fairness. Okay, so this probably isn't something that a guy should say online, but I'm going to say it anyway. So was Paul's answer to free the slave? Think about it this way. What's righteous? What's a better situation? An employee that's free but disrespectful, or a slave that has a righteous master? So the slavery would be a better situation then. I knew that was going to come up. No, and so I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that sometimes we look at a problem, and the answer that we give to the problem isn't the best answer all the time. I'm not saying that a slave should, or a master, you know, I mean, in the culture at that time especially, that was the culture. So in Philemon and Onesimus' case, we'll just use that as an example. I mean, from what I see, I don't know whether Philemon freed him or not, but I know that he did other work with Paul. He allowed him to do other work with Paul and go help him. Philemon did. Whether he freed him or not, I don't know. That's not the important part of it. The important part was how is Onesimus spiritually? See, and I'm not saying, again, that slavery is the right way to go. I'm just saying is that people view the problem and they give a selfish answer.
And probably in that situation, the proper thing that the master could do is make him free. Just say,
right.
you're a partner with me. You're just like I am.
Mm-hmm. And I would picture that's probably what Philemon did to Onesimus. You know, and even though when Paul says here, you can make someone free, you can give them freedom without them having the title of free. And so, and I'm not saying, again, that slavery is the answer. I'm just saying is that the answer has been selfish. The answer has been physically focused and worldly focused. And it's not, the answer has not been, how is this benefit the kingdom? And the answer is, how does this benefit me? And yes, I'm using the slave-master example, but that's where we're going back and we're applying it to the parent-child example or the husband-wife example. Because it's not always fair physically, but do we ask ourselves, is this about me or is it about the kingdom? Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. And Peter does touch on slavery here. You suppose I should just kiss a political career goodbye now? Or what? Anyway, so 1 Peter 2, verse 18. So that word unreasonable is used four times. It's translated crooked twice and perverse once, and then unreasonable the fourth time. Okay, so when we're looking at that here, and we're going to continue on here in a second, but whether they're good or bad, the slave is supposed to be respectful and submissive to the master, even if they're unreasonable. Let's go ahead and, if you continue down and continue reading, we're going to skip a couple verses to verse 21, but if you continue reading through that, Peter gives an answer here, an example to follow. Someone read verse 21 through 23.
For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously.
Okay. So, when Jesus was in an unreasonable situation, falsely accused, beaten because of his stance on the truth, not serving himself but doing God's will, he didn't utter a threat. He didn't give some reason why he shouldn't be given this way or treated this way, but he kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And as if we had been last few classes ago when we talked about husband and wife, chapter 3, if you continue reading, talks about the wife in the same way doing that and talks about the husband in the same way doing that. Keep entrusting yourself to the one who judges righteously. The slave to an unreasonable master was to continue to entrust him or herself to him who judges righteously, even if the master was wicked. Now, and I bring this up, and we're going to kind of tie all these together here now, but what I kind of want to, what we have missed and what the world has kind of, and we'll talk about the slave deal, but it goes even back to it's starting to get more now, the children parent deal, where the children should have, you know, more freedom or whatnot. And but what has been attacked more is marriage, and we talked about that quite a bit over the last few classes by the world. Okay, and you know, the, you know, women need to be independent. You know, you shouldn't be bound to it by a man, and it's always kind of slanted that way because we're in a society. I mean, by nature, that's God designed men to be leaders of spouses, of wives. But when we were in Texas 2 weeks ago, I guess now, I saw this movie clip. It's called Journey to Bethlehem. Anybody seen the previews of that? Okay. I don't recommend watching the movie because what I got from the movie clip, I'm not going to watch it. But so it's supposed to be, what's wrong with the story of Jesus going to Bethlehem, okay? And outside of, if you go watch the trailer, it's got a huge High School Musical feeling to it. Like, just horrible, you know? But one thing it says there is Mary almost gives the, at least in the previews, it almost gives Mary that she didn't want to marry Joseph. And Joseph has to try to convince her. And then when she finds out she's pregnant with Jesus, she goes and has to convince Joseph to marry her. She's like, you got a choice, Joseph, are you going to marry me or not? But that's not how it happened in the scripture. The angel came and told Joseph. And what I'm getting at there is that, and I've been maybe on this kick for a little while, but the feminism and anti-Christian marriage or relationships is even in what is so-called Christian. Because there is a few people, I think Joe Smallbone, the singer, one of the singers for King of Country, is in the movie. Antonio Banderas is in the movie. That's a little different. But anyway, the point is that it's supposedly, oh, this great movie about the journey to Bethlehem where Jesus is born. What would be wrong with that? But when you look at that, it had to insert something where Mary has to be the hero and convince Joseph to stay. It is changing, and the reason is, I think the reason is because it's about me and not about the kingdom. It's about selfishness and not about what is right. It's about what my benefit is versus, you know, and that's where the you know, we've been listening to it for the slave master deal. Well, you know, the white privilege has been going on, so it's not, now it's time for the black people to get what to get it, and the white people get what they deserve, what we had before. And now it's coming into the marriage. Well, the men have been just these jerks for a long time, and now the women should have a chance to be the bosses, and they're going to be the leaders, and they're going to really set them right. It's wicked. And the reason I'm bringing that up again there is because if you look at it from the slave perspective and how Paul is encouraging the slave there, that's like the worst relationship of all if you had a non-Christian master. And not even just a non-Christian master, but an anti-Christian master. You could have a non-Christian master that could probably get along with, but if he was anti, that'd be pretty bad. And the slave couldn't get out of that. And if we're putting ourselves in that position where Paul is encouraging those people to still do the work for the Lord, then how come we can't do that as parents or children? How come we can't do that as spouses? How come we can't do that in the church amongst the body of Christ? Now, let's turn back to Genesis again. And there's a, I don't know if it's an example, I guess. But that I kind of want to look at how the attitude was here. So Sarah dies, and Abraham sends a servant to go find a bride for Isaac, and he goes to his father's, back to his home place. And we kind of know how the servant chose or saw Rebecca coming down. He prayed to God, and in verse 55 of Genesis 24. Now they've agreed that they're gonna, you know, give the blessing of Rebecca to go and marry Isaac. But let's read 55 through 59, please.
But her brother and her mother said, "Let the girl stay with us a few days, say 10, afterwards she may go." And he said to them, "Do not delay me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master." And how far, Kurt?
59, please.
And they said, "We will call the girl and consult her wishes." Then they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" And she said, "I will go." Thus they sent away their sister Rebekah and her nurse with Abraham's servant and his men.
Okay, so now let's skip down a little bit. And they're going on the journey, verse 64 through 67. Okay, so let's take a look at Rebecca's attitude here for a second. Okay, so when Laban and her mother, Rebecca's mother, didn't want, or, you know, wanted to keep her, you know, have her stay 10 days and so on, and then they consulted her, her answer was, "I will go." And if you go down to verse 64 through 67, she sees Isaac and she asks who it is and so on, and she goes there, and then the servant tells Isaac what he's done, what the Lord has done. And Isaac brought her into his mother's tent, and he took Rebekah as his wife. So a question would be, her attitude wasn't, well, maybe I could get a little bit more. Her attitude was, I'm going to do it. Because this is, for lack of a better term, this is her duty, or maybe this is her role. And Isaac, his attitude, sometimes we think, man, it would have been really tough for Rebecca. But you got to also think about Isaac, too. That wouldn't have been the easiest thing. I mean, which one of you ladies would have went and not even met the guy and went and stayed the night with him the first night after you were married, right? Like, got married as soon as you saw him. Which one of you guys would have...
Yeah.
So, I mean, we look at that from our perspective, and we're like, you know, if you put yourself in that position, that's not something that I don't think any of us would do. But the way that they were, their view was that this is what is right. And I know you could say it's maybe a little bit on the culture, in that culture, that's how they did things. But you got to think that, I mean, they didn't have some of the same thoughts that we have. What if this woman's crazy? Or what if this guy is really, really, really a jerk? And the point in bringing that up is that they weren't selfish in their attitudes. They were selfless in their attitudes. They didn't look and see, well, maybe, you know, before I go, is he going to let me be an independent woman? Or before she comes, is she going to be a nagging wife? That's not what they said. And so, turn to James 3. But so when we're thinking about that, you think about how that attitude that they had, and how they didn't view it as, what could I get? Obviously, they were both being benefited in ways. I mean, Isaac wasn't to get a wife, and Rebecca wasn't to get a husband, and I mean, it wasn't that Isaac was poor. I mean, that probably helped out the situation. But I mean, I'm just saying is that it wasn't that they were selfish. You know, you could use any example. Like Kyle and I were talking about Job the other day, is that Satan was, God gave him permission to really wreck his life, but he kept his wife in the picture. Oh, never mind. He missed that one.
You are better now.
Anyway, so in James chapter 3, but no, serious though, is that sometimes, and we all joke about the husband-wife deal, you know, but the world is really, really attacking it, and the world is attacking the parent-child, just as they didn't focus on the right, they didn't have the right answer to the slave problem. I'm not saying that it wasn't a answer that needed to be done. I'm just saying that the correct answer wasn't something that they pursued. It wasn't spiritual. It was physical only. And so the same solutions are going to be applied to children and parents, and the same solutions have been applied to marriage. And the same solution has been applied to even the church. It's been physical and worldly. In James 3, let's go ahead and read 13 through 16, please.
Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambitions in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But wisdom from above is first pure and then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace.
Okay, so notice what James writes there. The wisdom that is demonic is jealousy and selfish ambition. And what those produce is disorder and every evil thing. So when jealousy, first let's talk about it in the slave-master relationship. The slave's jealous because the master treats someone else better than him. There's going to be disorder and every evil thing eventually. The master is jealous because maybe he's not getting as much work done, and so he abuses his slaves. There's going to be disorder and every evil thing. The child that, well, Susie's parents bought her a phone when she was 14. There's going to be disorder and every evil thing. Or the parents that, how come you can't just behave like so-and-so's kids? There's going to be disorder and every evil thing. In the spouse relationship, how come you can't be like, her husband does this for her, or his wife does this for her, or him? When there's jealousy and selfish ambition, there's disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. So if you're applying that wisdom from above, whether it be in the master, the slave, the husband, the wife, the parent, the child, do we view it as what does this benefit me? Or do we view it, is it about the kingdom? Is the kingdom first? And I'm not saying that there's not other issues in some of those things if you deal with the kingdom first. Because obviously a slave who is putting the kingdom first and has a wicked master, there's still going to be them other physical issues and trials that he has to overcome. But is it about him or is it about the kingdom? In the bad family, there's still going to be issues with kids that are poorly behaved or parents that are unreasonable. But is it about the kingdom or is it about self? And definitely in marriage, there's always issues, even if there's one spouse that is righteous. There's going to be issues. Even if both spouses are righteous, there's issues. But is it about the kingdom or is it about self? I'm not saying all the other answers are going to be solved just because we put the kingdom first. But we're going to be able to get through them. Joseph's answers weren't all solved because he put God first. Eventually, he was rewarded, but he still had problems throughout the way. How old was he when he was taken a slave? Do you remember? How old was he when he was taken a slave? Joseph. 17? 17? And how old was he when he was second over Egypt? He was 30. Yeah. So 13 years, some of us can't make it 2 weeks. But Joseph made it 13 years because he put God first, and eventually it paid off. So whether it's, and obviously we don't have slaves and masters today, you know, as they did in other times. View it employer, employee if you want to. Husband, wife, child, parent. 13 years is like a long time. Or it seems a long time. Let's go for eternity, it's not, but it seems like a long time. But what do we focus on? What is our view? Is it about the kingdom or is it about us?